This is an interview with Miss Loretta Myers by Edward McCurley for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. This interview was conducted in the public library at Greene of Kentucky on July 28, 1978. I think what I'd like to do is start off with maybe just a little bit of biographical information about you, what your full name is, and where and when you were born.
Well, my full name is Loretta Myers. That's M-Y-E-R-S. The first name is spelled L-A-U-R-E-T-T-A. A lot of people spell it this way and that, but that's my name. And I'm the last of three generations born in that house over there, that red brick.
And you were born in that house?
I was born there on a Monday evening, about a quarter of five, the 12th day of December, 1898.
What's the address of that house? Do you know?
Well, it's 100 Laurel Street. That's where the mailman puts his mail on the back.
100 Laurel Street.
Laurel.
But it faces on the front street, doesn't it?
It faces Water Street.
Water Street.
Water Street is the name of that street.
The reason I wanted to get that down is because I think it's important. Because that house, you said, is the oldest house in this area?
Yes.
Is that right?
Now that number on the house now, after the mail, start delivering the mail, you had to have a number.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 100 Laurel.
Okay, here in Greene.
41144 is the code number.
What year was that house built?
And you'd have to go to records in this courthouse. I wouldn't know.
But
we had things like that, but that 37 flood destroyed many a thing we had.
Mm-hmm.
Where it got 3 feet and upstairs, first time in the history of the house that the water, the Ohio River ever was in the upstairs. And I have a notch on one of the windows up there across the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Made it 3 feet upstairs. The 84 flood was the largest flood in that house up to the 37 flood.
I see. How high did the 84 flood go?
Well, it never got upstairs, but I don't know the depth of it. But it wasn't upstairs. Not even the 13 flood was upstairs. But the 37 flood was 3 feet net upstairs.
Did you live there in 37?
Yep. We had to get out, though, you see.
Mm.
We had to go over to Ashland.
I see.
My mother was sick. She was living. And she was sick. And she kept us saying, the water won't get up here. It never was in this upstairs because Grandma said it wasn't. And I said, Mother, the water is going to get upstairs. And she wouldn't budge. She was sick in bed. And the Coast Guard had to come and get her. And I went with her. I couldn't do that today, but they cut the banisters down upstairs and run the boat in. And we put her in that boat. And I got in with her, and I had to climb in. And went over to Ashland and put her in the hospital. And when we brought her back, of course, we brought her back in the ambulance. Because she wanted to come home.
Did you? Go ahead.
All her married life, she had lived right there and had all of us children. I was her ninth baby. So number nine is my lucky number. Always be like it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you lose a lot?
Yes, we did. It really hurt us. My mother and I both. It damaged the house so bad, and she didn't want to go no place else, and I didn't. And you couldn't get no help because everybody was busy trying to do for theirself. And I managed to build a big barn, one of the grates, and dry out a room, had it cleaned out by a colored fellow that's dead now. And we had twin beds, and we dried them out. The mattresses my brother had put up in the attic, so they were dry. And course, the doctor said she could come. And I slept one and her and the other. We had that dry as it could be up there at this big coal farm before we brought her down from Ashton. And Louis Staff was the undertaker, and he went and got her. He's dead now, I think. I think he is. He isn't our undertaker now.
How long did it take you to get back to normal after you got back in the
house? It took months, because our linens and everything were folded in drawers, and we had to cut the back of those pieces of furniture, cut the back out to get that out, and we got them all out, and we washed the mud out of them, and then we dried them, and then we sent them over to Ashland to the laundry. And to this day, some of the pieces I've got are still yellow. That's how yellow that water was.
Great.
That's a story within itself.
Tell me about that.
The doors upstairs were so swollen that they had to pry them open to get in, to get this mud. We lost all of our rugs, our linoleum. We lost everything. Only the bean hampers that we had with our china and glassware in filled up with that flood water, then froze, and we had to wait till it thawed and then put them through sterilized water and everything. We didn't lose too much that way, but the bedding and that, we had lost a lot of that.
You said you had to cut the backs out of the
chest of drawers where the linens were. Mm-hmm. The boys had to catch it and cut the back out to reach in and get. The drawers wouldn't come open. They were swollen. But the back would come off. It was just like a plywood in the back of that furniture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just there's more ways than one to do if you have to.
That's
you
right.
Can't throw up your hands and quit. You have to have courage to live and faith to die. And I had plenty of that. My mother did too. When I went back about a week afterwards, while she was crying to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fixing all the time to bring her home, but we wanted to keep her there till we thought was safe. And when she cried the last time, the next morning when I went up, I went with the undertaker with the ambulance to get her. I knew that I could straighten her out better at home, and she'd be happier and get her strength back faster by being home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were good to her up there. I don't mean that, but the first morning I went up there, she was crying. And I said, "What are you crying about?" And she said, "I'm hungry for bacon." Well, you know, everybody was concerned with that big flood. And so I said, "Well, now you just quit crying, and I'll be gone a little bit, and when I come back, I'll have you some bacon." And I went down on Winchester, where they'd opened up a little restaurant, and had them to fry her and the lady next door to her, fry enough bacon for the two of them. And there's a story there. This lady that was in the bed next to her was our next door neighbor, and they, either one had never been in a hospital before. And when I fixed the two twin beds, I fixed one for her. But it didn't work out that way. But I have a letter that she wrote to me before she died, telling me how kind I was. See, because my mother and her had gone their first school together. And then when they married, they lived next door to each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's something there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a story.
Yes.
And but she went to her daughter's. And she died at her daughter's, she died the following, the next summer, I believe. I believe she lived, I just can't remember, I'd have to look, because I have a letter that she sent to my mother, and she mentions me in the letter how kind I was to want. I was going to put her in one twin bed and mother in the other one. And her mother was a school teacher out in the county that they went their first school to.
Now, I understand your father, if I'm correct, had a blacksmith shop back here. Do you remember that blacksmith shop?
No, yes. The forge was just tore down, about 7 or 8 years ago, we destroyed it. It was caving in, and my brother was too crippled to be a working there anyhow. And the only way I could get him out of there would be to destroy it. It was hard for us to do it, but it was needing so much. It run clear across the lot and 9 feet back. And my father made a living for all of us there. And then when he passed away, my brother was a very bad cripple from World War II. And no First World War. And the government asked him what he'd like to be schooled in so that he could do bench work, because his feet were so bad. He almost froze to death up in Washington, D.C., a guard in the university. And he just fell down that way, and the ambulance picked him up and took him in the Walter Reed Hospital, and he was there 8 months, but he still come home on crutches, almost froze to death. Well, they told him, when he got strong enough, that he could go to Cincinnati to the Gruen watch place out on the hill, and they would train him in watchmaking. He selected that.
Mm-hmm.
He's mechanical minded, and he knew now that he couldn't do no automobile work or anything like that, because you have to climb under an automobile.
Right.
But he knew the engine. He knew all of that stuff. Well, he went down there the school in it, and he passed every one of them tests till it come down to his nerve test, and he shook like a leaf, because watchmaking, the instruments are very tiny that you work with,
mm-hmm.
and all that mechanism is tiny,
mm-hmm.
and they tried him, and he would shake like a leaf when he pick up, went through every bit of it, passed every bit of that mechanism in there. But he couldn't hold out.
Mm-hmm.
So he come back, and I knew he was a gunsmith and a locksmith, just anything that was mechanical. So I asked him if he'd like to start cutting keys. And he said, well, could have sat on the bench at the bench right in our old blacksmith shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think I could. So I got in touch with the Curtis Key Company over in Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
and they had an agent that went through here every so often and picked up orders. So they come to see us, and you had to buy several thousand blanks to go into it and pay for your cutter,
mm-hmm.
and they schooled him through a book. He didn't have to go over there to learn. They just gave him a code book and everything, and he studied that at night. And he made a good living cutting keys.
Mm-hmm.
People get locked out down here in the courthouse, and people get locked out of their cars going to work, and he could just go right there and open a car for them. He'd go right over here and just open the door for them.
Mm-hmm.
And a place in Covington would have took him, because he was such a good locksmith, but he didn't want to go away from home. He wanted to stay right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it was.
He worked in the old blacksmith shop.
He worked right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, how long was that blacksmith shop in operation with your father running?
And I've got a story that was that the Courier Journal came there with a reporter, and if you would like to see that and read it, I'll hunt it up for you. And when you're here again, I'll leave it with her, just so you leave it here.
Okay.
It's about the shop, and a picture of the forge,
mm-hmm.
and a picture of him,
mm-hmm.
and you can get quite a bit off of that.
Okay. I was wondering, what kind of memories do you have about that shop?
Well, the memories that I have about the shop, it was my bread and butter. It was my life,
mm-hmm.
and it was all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Only as we got to a place where we wanted to put our talent to work. And Dad said, now, each one of you is bound to have a talent. And if you want to put it to work, I don't have a lot of money, but I'll help you to put your talent to work. So, the first boy, no, the third boy come along there, and he asked him what he wanted to be. And he said he'd like to be a printer, a lithographer, if he could make it. Well, there was a place in Portsmouth where he could train and make a little money too, and that helped Dad. Mm-hmm. If you put your highest talent to work, your life is a pleasure and your money comes easy. I guess you know that. Well, he went to Portsmouth, mm-hmm. and he lived and died in Portsmouth. He got with the Portsmouth Daily Times, and he was there 50 years. I've got a picture that they took of him when he had been there 50 years in his pen. And he died there. His wife didn't come from there. She came from Marietta High. Mm-hmm. And they had two sons. Then the next brother, he wanted to be a barber. Well, Dad, he couldn't see that. He told him, I just don't see. Dad couldn't, he couldn't see that the world was changing in different places. And this boy said, well, I want to be a barber, Dad. And Dad was kind of disappointed because he was his favorite amongst us. Mm-hmm. You know, every parent has some other children thinks that the parents are showing a little bit more to them than others. It isn't that way, I don't think, but we felt that about this brother. Well, he wanted to be a barber, and he said if Dad didn't let him have the money, that there was a doctor here in Greenup that might let him have the money. Dad said, "That's not going to be that way at all. That I'm going to let you have the money. I'm just telling you that I'm disappointed in you. I didn't want you to be a barber. But if that's what you want to be," and boy, he was a good one. He went to Walnut Street in Cincinnati and come back with a doll. That was right after the First World War. And they had made arms to Marcel the women's hair. And he had the women, and I can show you a picture of him. And the building's still here on Main Street where he opened up, and he gave two other barbers and a bootblack work in there. Mm-hmm. I've got the picture of him and all that. And he did good there, but he had a little bad luck, and he died young.
I see.
Yeah, there's a story to that. Well, then, this brother that I was telling you about that wanted to be a clock, work on clocks and watches and that, and that was my, he just kind of, the war picked him up just when he was going good. Mm-hmm. Dad said, well now, what do you want to be? They was all about 2 years apart. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 2 years too from it. See, I was the baby boy. Well, this brother said he wanted to be a machinist. You see, he was mechanical, and Dad knew that. Mm-hmm. And he said, so that's what you want to be? He said, you sure now? He said, I'm sure. Well, now, he went to Cincinnati to the machine shops, and they put him through his examination down there, and my dad got a letter back, and this is what it said. Said, Mr. Myers, this boy can train us. He's highly talented in this field of work, mm-hmm. and he can be a great help to these young fellows that's trying to learn. And if you want to let him stay, we'll put him on a salary. And you knew $8 a day way back. That's way before your time.
Yes.
And he said, I'll give him $8 a day because I know he's paying board and room down here. Or you are, and if you want him to stay, I'll advance him just as I see. Says he can train these young boys in here. Well, the First World War broke out and picked him up in the draft. Mm-hmm. And he had to go to war. And when he come back on crutches. So you see, he had a sad life.
Yes. What was your talent?
Millinery.
Millinery.
Yes, sir. I was going to wear a hat down here that I made. Then I thought, well, nobody's wearing hats, so I won't wear it. I trimmed this hat. I didn't make this hat. I trimmed it. But a trimmer, I was a hat trimmer, and they get paid more than a hat maker. I had the high talent to be a trimmer. Well, I went to Cincinnati. There was three of us from Cincinnati to get the rest of our education. Uh-huh. See, there was nothing around here. Wasn't even hardly a good grammar room. Your parents had to do a lot for you to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll take that back now. There was a grammar room. Well, Dad said, now, do you think that's what you want to do? Well, Mother says, I think she's picked her highest talent, because every time Mother'd buy me a doll, well, I'd tear all that stuff off of that doll, and I'd dress that doll up the way I wanted to dress it, and I'd make it a hat.
Uh-huh.
And Mother wouldn't let me know it, but she was watching me, how I'd go about making that hat for that doll, or a cap. Boy, I'd make baby caps, take thread and a needle, and crochet. I crocheted many a first baby in this town, a baby cap, and run the ribbon through it to tie it under. One of those fellows still living, and he's a heart doctor in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. that I made a baby cap for.
Is that right?
Later on.
Uh-huh.
Well, Dad said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I've not got much money left. He said, now, you be sure that's what you want to do, because I'm going to try to help you. So I went to Cincinnati, and I was real lucky. I got room and board with a man that came out of Germany. He was a German. He spoke German. Of course, he spoke broken English. And he had married a Cincinnati girl that was from a German family, mm-hmm. and she spoke German. And they'd talk it at the table. And I learned a lot of German they didn't know how to learn. I was always on the ball. But I was lucky. I got room and board with this couple.
Mm-hmm.
But they lived out close to the University of Cincinnati on University Avenue. Mm-hmm. And I had to ride the trolley down into the city to the wholesale house. See, I had to go into the wholesale house to learn my trade.
Mm-hmm.
And they were Jewish people. This man and his wife owned the wholesale house. And the Jewish people really had the money in Cincinnati at that time and controlled Cincinnati. And I can tell you about how it is today, because I was down there and I was heart sick when I could see what had really happened.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got my room and board there. And I can tell you how I got that, too.
Please.
When I went down there, I just had a sleeping room.
Mm-hmm.
And the wholesale house, naturally, had a office and a bookkeeper. And we would have to go in the office to get our money. Now, most of the girls had to pay for their training. But these Jewish people could see some Jewish blood in me.
Mm.
I have got a little Jewish blood in me.
I see.
And see, the name alone is Jewish, Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I went in to take my first lesson, it was a big table with many students around the table. Some were German girls, and I was the only one that showed any likeness of a Jewish race. And this man and woman took to me just like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jewish people, if they can see that you're in dusters and that you're going to do a good job, they'll help you every way they can, for they did me.
Mm-hmm.
And my first lesson, I didn't know what I was doing hardly, but she sat at the end of the table and instructed me. And they had spools of thread. The spools were about like that, and then the thread was around them. And they were on a little runner that was above your table where your light was, where you worked.
Mm-hmm.
See, you used a thimble and a needle in my line of work.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of mechanism, that was my mechanism. If it was a needle and a thimble.
Yes.
And of course, I had a a thimble that had been given to me for my birthday. I've still got it. Mm-hmm. Solid silver.
Oh,
it took me clear through that course.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my thimble on. Well, that pleased them. They knew that I know how to sew.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing was for me to thread my needle. And that's what got me right in good with them Jews. I reached up to the big spool, see if I've got a Kleenex. My nose wanting to run. I bet I won't have one. Never did have one when I wanted it. I'll be all right. I'm giving you almost a story. When I reached up to get the thread off of the big spool, I reached it up with my thumb and index finger. Now, I don't know what's going on or nothing. I pulled the thread down the length I thought it should be, and I put it through the eyelet the first time. That's what got me got right in there.
Nice.
I didn't have to pay for my lessons or nothing. They saw it in me, and I went right through that course. It never cost me a penny, and they paid me every Saturday at noon.
Goodness sakes.
That's how talented I was. Uh-huh. Not bragging on myself, but you know I had to be for them Jews, because these other girls was paying for their studies, for their lessons. But I knew how to keep my mouth shut. When I went out to the office, well, there was an envelope, and they start paying me right now. And I turned out lots of work, and I went clear through that, and went clear to the cutting table, and I broke the record in that place of cutting hats.
Is that right?
I cut more hats than anybody had ever cut in there, and I didn't know I was doing that either. But you went clear around to the cutting table, and all of that stuff is cut on the bias.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them girls couldn't learn that to save their soul. They'd waste up. Then they'd have to start all over again. A perfect boss. And I just talented. Nobody ever told me that.
This is side two of an interview with Miss Loretta Myers of Greenup, Kentucky.
And then I folded the silk down like that. Because they're watching everything they do. She's right there on the table, moving it on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
You put your scissors through there, and when that comes out, it'll be a perfect bias. And every hat that was made couldn't be made unless it was on a perfect bias. And I don't know, God must just give it to me. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't cut a hat till you was ready for your papers. And one day she told me, she said, "That table's yours." Then I was in charge of 12 girls that were apprentice yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do a good job there because I had to know what this girl could do and what she couldn't do. She was promoted by the way I put the work in her box, right here at the side of her chair.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them could learn, some of them didn't want to learn, and some of them tried hard to learn. And there's different avenues in it, and the hardest part of it is a trimmer. If you can trim a hat, you'll go right to head of your class, and I could do that. I know just what went on there, and when you touch a flower or ribbon and stick a needle in it with a thread, you don't want to touch it no more, and I knew that. And when I moved the hat off over to the next girl to put the lining in it, and that was another thing. Some of the girls could not learn to slip a stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And God just told me this exactly how to do. See, I'm a God-fearing person.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to God. I don't belong to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it is. I think you know that.
Mm-hmm.
You give it and you take it. And I always put him first in my life. Now, these Jewish people like me. And they invited me to the synagogue. But I let them know that I wasn't a full-blooded Jewish, but they loved me just the same.
How long did you work at millinery?
Well, let's see. I'd have to give that a little thought. I wasn't there long until I got my papers. Boy, Dad was really proud of me.
What did you do when you got your papers then?
Well, I could get work in any big wholesale house where they paid good money. I could get in any big department store. I worked in Parsons when they let their hat store go clear to the store up in New York. His name was Marcy G. And I don't know, he must have wrote to Cincinnati and found out about me. And I'm living back here now with my brother. And he was beginning to get sick, and he went down south that winter on account of his health. And I was living alone over here. And one day I get a letter. And this hasn't been too far back. I get a letter out of Rochester, New York. And his name is Morris, and he's mine. And he sent me paper to fill out. And asked me in the letter if I'd go over to C.H. Parsons and Company in Ashland and try to see what I could do for their mailman department. They wasn't selling nothing over there.
Uh-huh.
And they had one up at Anderson and Newcombs and Henderson. But they wasn't doing too good, but he didn't ask me to go there. He asked me, I guess he found out how close it was. Well, I stood up almost all night and sweated blood to fill out some paper, because I'd been away from it a while. And there wasn't but one question that I didn't answer. And in the letter, he told me to go over there, and the buyer had a private office, and to ask for her on the second floor when I got off the elevator, and she would interview me and take my papers in. Now, the Jewish people stick together. They knew I wasn't cold-blooded Jew, but now, they'll help one another if you help yourself. They know whether you're helping yourself. But I forgot all about Melman. I'm just taking care of my dear brother. And I'm staying there by myself, and I'm going to Alexandria, Louisiana, which is about 95 miles from New Orleans. And I'd been there, and I knew it was a good place for me to go. Well, I goes over on Monday morning. These papers tell me when to go. There was a bus running out of Greenwich, so I didn't have no car. But there's a bus coming up here to the drugstore corner at 7 o'clock. A lot of people around here were working over in Ashland because there's nothing here to do. I come over there, got on that bus, and it was put me in Ashland about 40 minutes before Parsons opened. And I knew what is the drugstore, and I went in there out of cold. Oh, it was cold, bitter cold. And they was going to try to work me up way before Easter to see what they could do about the store over there. And I was in that drugstore and get myself off talking most of the time. The fellow that was a druggist in there was out of Greenwich too. And I knew him, but he had a car. He lived up in East Greenwich. I was never a person to ask anybody to do anything that I could do myself. So I knew all these people that would get on the bus there, and we'd all talk and laugh and go up there. Then the store opened, I went in, went back to Alexander, went up on the second floor, and I went to the rest of that. So I asked the foreman in there where her name was Board, B-O-A-R-D. I'm a slipping, but I'm still got a memory. And I asked where Miss Board's office was. And he showed me to go right in there, so she's already in. She's expecting me. She just got a letter over to her, too. So I went in and she introduced herself. I told her who I was, and then I handed her my papers. And she sat there and looked at them and read them all over carefully. And I said, now, Miss Board, there's one question that I didn't answer, and I'm going to tell you ahead of time so that they won't waste your time and waste mine. Because I've come up here at my own expense. I said, that's blank there. And if it takes that question to be answered for this job, I don't want it. I know my life. She looked at that and she said, that don't count for nothing. That's just some crackpot put that in there. Well, I said that's the way I thought about it, was a crackpot that put something in a paper when you were trying to help somebody or they were trying to help you. See, because I figured that I could straighten that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mr. Morris has investigated you and Cincinnati and you out there. Well, I went in there with a determination that I'd make that place pay. And it don't pay today because I've run it up. I think the foreman's still in there. And he watched me like a hawk. And all the training that I had, I didn't give it to nobody. I had been trained, and I had went through a whole lot to get my training. Now, I don't know what kind of a boss Miss Board was, because she went over to Columbus to do the bond. Rochester shifted in there, and then she'd go over there and select what she thought this part of the country would buy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say she wasn't a good boss. I never trained in bond, although I could have been her. But I went in there with a determination that I was going to sell that merchandise. And you can believe me or not, people come out of Huntington when the same stuff is up there at Anderson and Lucas and come in there and buy hats from me. And they come out of Orton and buy hats from me. They come from Moorhead and Gracie, and they've never had any business from that place. One would tell the other one. If you went to get a nice hat or something, good on it. See, I studied the face, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I had it on these other girls. They wasn't even, they hadn't trained in salesmanship. And you've got to know the face of a person when you're going to sell them a hat. You've got to know that. You've got to know if they take a big one or a little hat. And I am a self-help manager too. Who didn't think that? Well, I was there and I was getting everything going good. And I outsold three, we had four corners. And I outsold that three girls in the corner. And of course, there's a little jealousy in people that way. And I didn't do that to show them up. I did it to show them in Rochester what I could do in Boston. That's what I was hard for. I couldn't imagine Parsons not selling that merchandise. Well, I wasn't there long till I was just selling everything they could keep in there. And of course, I got more money because I was a trimmer. A trimmer's the highest paid in that field. And I schooled in that family in Cincinnati. Those girls taught me that. Well, somebody came in and they just loved this house. But they wouldn't like the trim on it. I said, what kind of trim do you want on it? Well, they tell me. I said, well, do you want to buy the hat and select your ribbon or your flower or your pin or your whatever you want on it? When you come back, I'll have it ready for you. Just give me a little time. The only thing that was hard on me up there, they didn't have a workroom. And I had to work out of a then underneath the counter with my stuff, and the public made you nervous. But they didn't have a workshop up there, you know, sewing room. But I did it on the floor. I was determined that I'd please people. And one morning, it was a real cold morning. There was a little woman who got off the elevator. The elevator was real close to our department. She got off the elevator and I'm walking over into the house department, and I approached her. Any one of us could approach the customer. We didn't have to fight over him. We had a corner. We knew what to do that way. And these other three girls that I worked with, as she got off the elevator, recognized her. And under their breath, they said to me, Molly, you can have her. Because she comes to me all the time, if you don't buy nothing. And you can have that old bag or something like that, which was ugly for me.
Right.
And I said to myself, oh, so you've been in here before and you didn't sell it? Well, I'll just show them how you sell a hat. But I didn't say nothing. Now, Mr. Pastor, fast, but still, the foreman up there, he stand right back there and he's watching everything. And he knew that she'd been in there time after time with the bottom, because she was out of Louisville, and she visited somebody national. I don't know none of it, but they've all crowded around there and they're going to give me a hard time. I said, thanks. I must see for nothing. So they're ready for nothing. I said, what do you mean? He wasn't expecting me. He was in. Yes, he could be. He had diamonds all around. You could tell Vermina. He had plenty of money. Now I'm going to get some of it for Paul's missus. He ran up there and bought it. He said, first thing she said to me, he said, you knew me, didn't you? And I said, well, I'm doing it very wrong. He said, I knew so much. He said, these other girls always were so close to me. She never bought nothing from me. And I said, what are you interested in? What color? I said, I knew what size hat she would take, but I know you must have some color in mind. She said, well, I'll tell you what I'd like to have. She said, I'd like to have a navy blue hat made out of navy blue taffeta. She said, I had looked in some of my shoes out of Louisville. She said, I had looked Louisville all over three times for a hat like that. And she said, I've been in here, but I never could find anything in here that I liked. And I said to lady, you sit right down here at the dressing table, and I'll take care of you. And I walked right around from her back to one of the bins, to one of the most beautiful hats that we'd had, and it didn't sell because it was expensive, and it was a good hat, handmade. I could have made it, but it didn't. It came out of over here at Rochester, and you just wait just a minute. I'd leave on over, and when I went around, I could face her sitting at the table, and that hat I knew was hers. These girls were dying to laugh. They think I'm really stuck, but they didn't get no customers while I'm with this little lady. And it wouldn't make no difference, because I was going to get about three customers out of her. Yeah, so I went around, and I showed it to her. She said that's exactly what I've been looking for. And he didn't feel like that. Now, Mr. Fulton right up there, he's watching me like a hawk. He don't think I know that, but I've been trained, and I know he's watching me like a hawk. He knows, too, she's been in there time after time. Never bought a thing. I think she messed up, buddy. I'm going to fool you, too. I'm going to get some money out of this lady. So, she looked the hat over, and she said, what do you think? She didn't put it on. And I said, I'll put the hat on you. I went to the back of the chair. I put the hat on her. She's looking at herself in the mirror. She looked up at me and she said, how did you know that that was my hat? And I said, well, I said, I've been selling hats for a long time. And I know that you're a little like me and you can't wear everything. She said, well, I want this hat. How much is it? And I told her. She said, now I live in Louisville. Would you send that hat to Louisville? I said, I know something will. But I said, now, listen, as you're hard to fit and hard to find what you want, now I want you to buy several hats for me. That's all you've done for me. She said, well, that's just what I'm going to do. I went back to the bin again. I didn't pick up nothing that she could see. I went back to the bin. I got another hat. They're just itching to laugh. They think I'm really killing time. I could read them like a book. I bent this hat up and I showed it to her. It was an expensive hat. Now they did have expensive hats. Beautiful hats. The cheapest hat they had in there was $3.75 for sales, and it went up to $35. And I'm showing her $35 hat. This hat I brought up was a beautiful hat. This looked like a, it was all bedded down with the stars. It was a star hat. It was 35. And the next hat I brought up to her was a little sailor for more sport wear. All three of them had fit in her life at different times. About all three of them. One more thing. She said, did you take a test from me? And I said, yes, I did. I took a test. And of course, when we took a check and didn't know too much about it, we had a way back where we went back to put the piece of paper in the crown and get them ready for the packer. Or she said, now you have to send these to Louisville. I said, I'm going to send to Louisville for you. When I wrote after what she owed me, then I just turned over and got another slip of paper. And I said, now you give me your name, your address, and I'll know to put Louisville on it. And she said, well, when do you send it? I said, lady, I'm not going to wait for them to come and get these hats. I'm going to take them back to the shipping room myself for you, and I'm going to stay back there and see if they take them right out and send them. See, I had a way about me that these other girls didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you will. Well, she said, they'll beat me home. She said, I'm going to stay up here another day. She said, they'll beat me home, won't they? And I said, well, yeah, they probably will. And the boss had told us not to go back to the shipping room, that the boy would come out when there was anything to be shipped. I didn't pay no attention to that. I got her all checked out and everything, and I took my paper. I never said nothing to the floor man. I goes right back to the shipping room, and all he could do would be farming, and I was satisfied. And he couldn't find me nohow, because Rochester had me. And I went back into the shipping room, and the two boys back there looked at me like, what are you doing back there? I said, boys, get busy. I've got the piece of paper already in them, in the boxes, and get these out of here, right to Louisville, right now. It's a rush order. I said, oh, woman, I have like that. And this, the foreman said to me, he said, you be all I ever do, sir. You be all I ever do, sir. Well, I had another little training that these girls I work with didn't know about. Them days you wore suits. I wore suits and blouses, so I could have a clean blouse every day. And those blouses all had pockets. Well, I could have me some scratch paper when I got coming. Two or three customers, they didn't want to get mixed up, and I had a way of my own keeping books. Because you got a little book every morning, and you had to keep your what you sold in that book, and it had to be neatly done. And if it was only a hat pin, for 35 cents, it had to be in it. And you only had a few minutes for the bell to send that up to the office to a courier.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did have nothing to ever come back on it. My book was always perfect. Not bragging on myself, but it shows what training will do. Training you have to have in anything. You can have plenty of education, but you've got to have training with it. You've got to put your high talent to work. If you don't, and you try to push your talents you don't have, you're lost. And will you agree with me on that?
Sure.
Well, we've had a kind of a busy day that day, and we just had a few minutes before the bell rang to fix our book up. Well, I went up to the desk, because there's plenty of desk here for them all, and got my book all fixed up before that bell rang. And I said, put in the carriages, and this woman, she'd been mad at me ever since I picked this old woman up. And I knew it, but I wasn't letting on. She stepped up and looked on my book, which was out of line. She had no right to do that. She knew I'd outsold her that day, but I didn't do that to show her up. I was going to make a record there for them people up in Rochester. Parsons didn't mean nothing to me when I'm working in their store.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. and Miss Parsons were living at that time. And they come in on the floor a few days after this to see who I was. And to beat it all, Mr. Mars up in New York made a trip down one Saturday morning after Easter to see what the woman looked like that broke the record. And I happened to be back in the army room. We'd get 15 minutes to get away from the public and get us a cup of tea or coffee. And I was back there because I had a sick headache. I'd worked my brain. And he was standing there, but I knew when I walked out on the floor it was him. John Psychic, too. I knew that was Mr. Mars. He was a little Jewish man. And he come meet me. He said, "Are you Loretta Mars?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Then." He said, "Well, I wanted to see what you look like." And I said, "Well, why did you want to see what I look like? What have I done?" He said, "He put this on the painting basis, and I thought that was wonderful. But he said, you broke the record here Saturday for Easter. We've never done that kind of business." And Miss Boyd was standing right beside her in the bar, called the department. And she was proud of me, too. And getting back to this girl that was jealous from the time I took care of that old woman, she was a little bit of a woman. She was very ugly. Well, she looked on her bed and she said, "Well, that's wrong." She said, "You couldn't have climbed down all of that trip." And I said, "You think it's wrong?" She said, "I know it's wrong." She said, "I don't never show me that much when I couldn't come to it. I just picked up my work stuff. I walked right back to the bar's office and I laid it down. I said, "Miss Ford, Miss So-and-so said that my record for the debt, my account for the debt here is wrong. And I don't want to think up the office because I have never been called up the office for nothing. And I said, I want you to proofread it before I put my salary." Well, she took a pencil and she ran home down there. She said, "Well, what's wrong with her?" She said, "She owes you an apology." She said, "It's correct to the penny." And I said, "No, I don't want no apology from her. But I do want you to tell her that she should tend to her work in here, and I'll try to tend to mine. And whenever I don't do it right, I expect to be called up to the office. And this Mr. and Miss Parsons knew my people, and they were tickled to death I was working in there. And I knew they never let me have any trouble in there. They were fine people. And Miss Fullwalker was her son-in-law. And he was amazed at that girl doing that." Now, those are the things that come in your life that you have to know how to handle. She tried every way in the world to be nice to me, and I felt sorry for her. But I've been going to Ford, tell her not to bother that to me. All I asked of her was to tend to her work. She probably has to work just like I do. And when you work and handle the public, there isn't any better roses. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way I want it to be.
And you enjoyed your work.
I enjoyed the people. I treated all of them alike. And I studied them before I ever picked up a hat to put on my head. See, I had studied the face so I'd know how to sell a hat. And I stayed there, but of course business got bad after the big season was over. And today I could ride up there and get a job for 100.